The following is paid for by Ganem's Garden Center and Florist LLC. The opinions expressed are solely those of the sponsor and not necessarily those of WICC 600 or our advertisers.
Now it's time to find out what's growing in Ganem's garden. Here's Lee Ganem, that garden guy, from Ganem's Garden Center, Kings Highway Cutoff, Fairfield, on WICC 600.
Well, it's a bit chilly out there, but it is September. It's September 1, actually, and it's Labor Day, folks. You believe it, the summer is almost done, but I think we're in for a little bit warmer weather in September, according to all the long-range forecasts, so we're not out of the woods yet. The only thing that's suffering, really, are the vegetable plants that are struggling to ripen. So, but we'll talk about that in a little bit. We're taking your calls, 203-333-WICC, 203-333-9422. We got lots of things going on, of course, and like we said, the cool nights here are wonderful for sleeping. I mean, it's ideal, but the tomatoes aren't ripening, the peppers aren't growing, and the eggplants seem to have a little bit of a problem this year, too, but this is a normal thing for us, and we can still plant a lot of material, so let's get all those fall vegetables in. We have a nice assortment, thanks to our friends up at Gilberti's. My buddy Sal is probably one of the last guys to grow fall vegetables, so we're taking advantage of the situation and offering everything that we know is going to do very well, or you can do stuff from seeds. So come down to the store. Like we said, if you look at a package of seeds and has a maturity date of less than 60 days, it'll probably be right on the mark. In fact, a young lady had posted something about she started okra plants, and she was showing the okra plants on Facebook, and I kind of plugged it in and said, well, you're a little late. I mean, okra takes a long time to mature, so unless she's in Florida, but I don't think so. I think she's here in Connecticut. It's a Connecticut gardener Facebook. So unfortunately, sometimes you don't get enough information from people, and you start stuff that's not going to make it this year. In fact, we had another fellow come in the store and picked all his potatoes and want to put more potatoes in, and that's not going to happen. So it's too long of a season. But this week we're going to talk about grasses. Of course, this is the time of the year when grasses really show their stuff. The plumes are coming up beautifully, and a lot of them, there's a number of situations that where you can put grasses. Most grasses prefer a lot of sun and dry soil. They don't like wet feet, and they don't like the shade. The only one that comes to mind that might take some shade is the Hakakolona, the Japanese forest grass. And it's not a real tall grass. It's probably about 18 inches to 2 feet. Chartreuse looks beautiful in the wind. And then we have all of the Penicetum, and we have all the Miscanthus, and they're a variety of plumes. You can tell by the plumes and the heights. Most of the Penicetum, like Alpec and a number of other varieties, we even have a little bunny, and we have Piglet, and we have all kinds of names on them, but they're a good selection to put into a garden in the full sun with maybe a nice tree, a specimen tree, and then put some stuff around them, and then you can add a fall flowers. And it's not really time for fall flowers yet, but to stay in tune with everybody, we do have some in. And if you're tired of those flowers, and they should be doing very well, your summer flowers, I mean, it's a shame to have to pull material, especially these commercial jobs where people want color all the way through to October. Well, we have to delay planting for about 3 weeks, so we'll talk a little bit more about that later on. Warm season grasses, of course, are what we grow here. Cool season grasses are grass types that grow in your lawn, so which is why we don't have a lot of zoysia here, because it's a warm season grass. And the folks that do have zoysia, they know that when it gets cool, of course, then it turns off color and stays off color until the soil is warm again. So most of our cool season grasses are bluegrass, fescues, and ryes. And then the warm season grasses are all of the other grasses that are the ornamentals. And these need to be treated a little differently. And now's the time to, if you want to tie them up a little bit because you're afraid of a storm, if they're getting too tall. So there's a number of ways to prevent the flopping, as we call it. But they are grasses that need to be cut every spring, not in the fall, folks. And the reason why we don't cut them in the fall is because we've been getting such horrendous winters that if the water gets down, if you cut those grasses back in the fall, number one, you lose the winter interest. Number two, you get a lot of water in the stem. stems, and watering the stems is not a good thing, and it's almost like having a bald spot on your head when these grasses get cut back, and the city of Bridgeport's famous for that, and of course, we're not going to pick too much on them, but it's a little bit of education going on. You really want to leave those grasses up all winter long and cut them back in the spring so that they can reflush, and there's a number of places where I can that I go by, and I get very upset, and I see the brown stalks about 2 feet up in the ground, and then the green above that, and they really should have cut them back to about 6 inches off the ground, but again, education. So we keep trying to educate people, but we do need three seasons for the warm season grasses, which would be summer, fall, and winter. There is no spring to them, so this is why you want to incorporate them now, and you'll pay off in the long run, because as you as they mature from year to year, of course, they get bigger and bigger, and you can have your own little farm going if you want to separate them or cut them up a little bit in the spring and add them to other parts of your landscape. So come down, take a look. We have a wonderful selection, and we have a lot of other things that you could put into your fall planting. But the one you have to be careful of is Pennisetum rubrum, and that's that beautiful purple fountain grass. And it's not really a hardy type grass. It's used in containers. We use them in containers all summer long. They don't come back, so that's why you'll never find them in the same department as the perennial grasses. So we don't want people to buy things that are not going to work in certain areas. Then you have a whole other series of other ground-type cover grasses, and that would be a chorus, which these are all grow under a foot, and they're really neat. And carex is another one, and larope is considered a grass, and it gives you a little flower. And if you go down south, you'll see a lot of larope. They put them all over the place, and they just take a mower in the spring and just run them over right over the top of them, and they come back like a champ. So there's always a grass for a situation. We have a number of them named for the northern part of the country. Northern sea oak grass is kind of different. It has oat-like plumes. Lyme grass, named after Lyme, Connecticut, old Lyme. It's blue with a gray tint, and that's really nice for the shoreline. It kind of blends in. And, of course, blue oak grass is very similar to blue fescue, but it grows about 2 feet. And then we have the blue fescue, or festuca, and that grows about a foot. And all of them plume, and they are all deer-resistant and drought-resistant for the most part. So if you have an area where, you know, especially down the beach, those folks down there have a hard time getting a lot of plants to grow well down there, and they'll do very well. You can get a lot of these grasses to grow 5-6 feet. So the miscanthus, of course, are the tallest ones, and they give that little bit of a feathery plume, and then Pennisetum have that bottle brush, so any way you want. If you want to stake them, of course, you do want to stake them early in the season, especially if they get really big every year on you. And this year, they're getting a lot larger because of all the moisture. This wet summer, and it really was a wet summer, outside of those few hot days that we had, it was very moist. And the folks that were running their sprinkler systems and worrying about watering and et cetera, really did waste a lot of time and effort and money because you really didn't need all that. So
now it's time to find out what's growing in Ganem's garden. Here's Lee Ganem, that garden guy, from Ganem's Garden Center, Kings Highway Cutoff, Fairfield, on WICC 600.
Well, I know all you folks out there are trying to catch up on some sleep, and I don't blame you. So remember that these shows are on podcast, and we probably won't get them until Wednesday because it's a holiday here at WICC. My man Danny, he's my last resort that you send me to podcast. And so he's a busy guy. He's got a show, and we don't have a dedicated person for that right now, so hopefully down the road. The phone lines are open, 203-333-WICC, 203-333-9422. And this portion of that garden guide brought you by Green Envy. Green Envy, one of the best mulches you can use, all organic, and has a fertilizer factor. So this is a great product to put down if you want to put it around, say, your asparagus beds, some of your other gardens that need need of nutrition along with mulch, and it's you can even put it in your garden, of course. And we don't really want to put an awful lot down right now in a lot of the garden, because you want to make sure that the soil is warm, and the soil is relative to the water temperature, and is dropping every day. If you listen to Bill Jackman during the week, he gives us the water temperatures, and they're dropping like 2 degrees a day. So, but the other big deal is strawberries. If you have strawberries, now's a good time to whack them back. You want to get rid of all that growth and get them clean. And if you put down some of that green envy mulch, you could add the straw later on as a winterizer, and that's how you leave the straw on there until the spring. And then in the spring, of course, the berries grow on top of the straw, nice and clean, less slugs, etc. So just a little bit of effort will give you a wonderful crop. And plus, you would do want to feed those plants all season long. So let's go right to the phones. Good morning. You're on the air with that garden guy.
Good morning, Lee. Within the last few weeks, you spoke about hydroponic gardening. Is that something that you think at some point in time the home gardener will be able to do?
Well, you must be reading my future notes, because I have a very good friend of mine, Paul Salou, from the old Earth Grow folks up in Lebanon, Connecticut. And he's been at three different operations now. He's a hydroponic specialist, I guess we can call it. And he started a company up in Marion, Maine, I believe it was Marion. And it was called Backyard Beauties. And if you went to, say, Whole Foods or stuff, you would find these wonderful tomatoes called Backyard Beauty. And they were hydroponic grown. And then he switched to they started adding peppers and eggplant and cucumbers, and now he's into hydroponic lettuce, and he's in Massachusetts. So I'm going to have him on the show, so this way he can explain how hard or easy it is for the homeowner to do hydroponic.
Okay.
And a lot of people are doing it. We actually have a hydroponic right here, a gentleman named Harold Blackwell. He's a customer of mine, and he has a hydroponic farm, a vertical farm, in Bridgeport. And I don't remember the name of the company, but you can Google them up if you want. And he was one of the few guys, and they sell to a lot of the restaurants and stuff, so that's how you get that nice clean lettuce. That's the advantage of hydroponics. There's no soil involved. So
well, and it's starting to show up at the local grocery stores, and I even asked one of the local stores if we could get it, and they did, and it lasts.
Yeah, well, it's fresh. It and it's, you know, it grows in water, so if you keep it in those containers that they send it in,
right,
it stays nice and fresh. So the only drawback to some of this, you have to be, if you're really into organics, there's not a lot of organic liquids that are out there outside of fish emulsion and a few other products that they can feed with. So that's essential. And a lot of these places, if they grow hydroponically, they also will grow fish. And the fish, the poop from the fish, of course, is in the water, and that's how they get feeding. So this, it's going to be a very interesting conversation. He's a nice man. I've known him about 30 years. So look forward to that show, maybe in a couple of weeks, if I can get a hold of him.
Okay, great. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Good morning. You're on the air with that garden guy.
Hi, Lee.
Yes, sir.
This is Don in Stratford. I saw you the other day. I'm the guy who said I sit in my car with a notebook and listen to
Yes, you do. I'm very proud of you. I'm hoping you're not driving while you're doing that. You're pulling over the side of the road.
That's right. That's right. My thing is, I actually am having good luck with my tomatoes. But the thing is, when they grow great, I mean, they're like probably 6 feet tall. And the problem is the traditional tomato cages that most places have, when the tomatoes really get going, they're almost twice as high as those cages. And then they start falling over from the weight of the tomatoes. And, you know, it's a bit of an issue. So what I've done in the past is I'll take an additional cage and actually get some wire and wire it to the first cage so that the cage is taller. But I'm wondering if there's any tomato cages out there that are already tall enough in the first place. I saw a guy one time who would go to probably Home Depot, and he would get the stuff that they use to reinforce concrete, you know, the
concrete wire. Yeah, concrete wire.
And he'd actually make his own.
Oh, yeah, you can do that and just add it onto your other cage. But keep in mind, now that we're getting late in the season, a lot of the flowers on the very top, you may never get maturity into a tomato. So this might not be a bad idea to give them a little haircut. And if you have a lot of fruit set toward the middle or, you know, at chest height, I would cut back that tomato just below your head and let them mature better. More flowers doesn't always make it better. And if you cut back a lot of the new growth, all that energy will go to the tomatoes that are already set.
Oh, okay. Excellent.
Yeah. This way you don't have to worry about extensions. So.
Oh, okay. Thanks a lot, Lee.
You're welcome.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Good morning. You're on the air with that garden guy.
Hi. I'm Phoebe Tucker in Shelton, and I want to know if you have any strategies for transplanting in the fall.
What do you want to transplant?
Different shrubs, different flowering perennials, that type of thing. I also have another question.
Well, the general rule of thumb is you can do it right around Labor Day and all the way into, say, November if you want to transplant a lot of shrubs, basically evergreens. So if you're talking about azaleas, rhododendrons, and yews, et cetera, or cypress or anything like that, it's good. If you want to transplant things like hydrangea or hibiscus, and you need to wait till they stop flowering and they lose their leaves, and you have plenty of time, probably in November, to move those.
Fantastic. Also with the roses, when do you start cutting back, and are there any strategies there?
You stop feeding roses in August so that they slow down, and we talked a little bit about hips. That's the fruiting bodies that are on the roses. Basically, you'll see a lot of them on the Rosa rugosa. They're very prominent, and that's where you, of course, attain vitamin C from. But you don't want roses to keep growing, or you want them to keep growing, but you don't want to keep feeding them, because if they get any new growth, it'll probably freeze off. And the best cutback will probably be in November or December if they're really tall and gawky. I would cut them back about a third, and depending on the type of the rose also, if you have shrub roses or you have hybrid teas, climbers, the rules are all different for all three types.
How about tree roses?
Tree roses, I wouldn't cut them back now. Do you bring them in the winter or do you leave them out?
No, I leave them out.
Or do you cover them with anything?
No, not really. I just build them up with mulch.
Right, but I mean, do you cover the tops? Because sometimes we went to in Stratford there, they have the rose garden, and those folks leave their tree roses in the large containers or 12 or 14-inch containers, and they actually pull the whole container up in November, December, and they put them into a shed to protect them from getting windburn on the growth on the top.
Could you cover them with burlap? Or
yes, you should cover them with burlap if you want to leave them in the ground, yes. But I wouldn't do a lot of pruning. You do all that pruning in the very early spring.
Okay, so you don't, and the regular roses, you don't cut back?
No, not unless you have, like, knockouts that are 6 feet tall and you want to cut them back to about four. So if you get a big snow load, you won't get any broken branches. Plus, the advantage in the spring is if you have any dieback over the winter, you have more to work with than if you cut them all the way back in the fall.
When you water roses, like, for instance, we have a watering system, I cover them with plastic, big, you know, bags or long strips just to keep the mildew down. Is that a good idea?
No, not plastic. Plastic will hold more moisture.
Okay. No, I just wild rain.
That's going to be the problem with your bag law, because plastic is very good for milk and produce and stuff, or meats. But, you know, brown bags are the best insulators, so you really don't want to put plastic around those roses.
When you water them, and then I take
them. I wouldn't. You should be watering at the base. You shouldn't be watering the plant, so.
Right.
So they should never get water on the leaves. If you worked for me, I'd fire you.
What I do is I go and I take a blower and I dry them off.
No, you don't do all that, honey. Just water properly.
Okie dokie.
Alrighty.
Have a great day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Good morning. You're on the air with that garden guy.
Good morning, Lee. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thank you. This is just a quick question stepping off on the last caller. I want to transplant a 2 to 3 year growth Japanese red maple.
Yep.
And it's... That's come from here to Vernon. Suggestions, please?
You'll want to wait till the leaves fall off or they start to dry up in, say, late October, hopefully.
Oh, great.
When it's dormant. See, you want to do them when they're sleeping, and they won't know what hit them. See, if you move them now, you may get a lot of dieback on them and all kinds of problems, and they won't. And they're probably still growing roots. Don't forget, fall is for planting for a reason. And a lot of these plants, if you put them in now, establish a very good root system to maintain them during the winter. And there's a hell of a lot less watering right now, and work on them. That's why fall is a great time to plant anything.
Fantastic. That's great.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Have a good day.
You too. Bye.
Bye. Good morning. You're on the air with that garden guy.
Yeah, Lee, hi. I have a large overgrown rhododendron. Can that be trimmed back?
Well, if you want to lose your flowers for next year, yes. Otherwise, be patient and wait until it blooms next year. When it's all through flowering, you could probably go back one-third of the height and width, and that will shape it up. You might lose a few flowers, but you won't lose all your flowers. Your buds for next year are already on that plant. So if you go and prune now, anything in that family, the azaleas, rhodies, mountain laurel, all those buds, Andromeda, all those buds are starting to form now in September. And if you cut them off, you won't have any flowers where you cut them.
Okay, good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Now it's time to find out what's growing in Ganem's garden. Here's Lee Ganem, the garden guy, from Ganem's Garden Center, Kings Highway Cutoff, Fairfield, on WICC 600.
And we're back. And this portion of our show is brought to you by Azomite. Azomite, my favorite additive for anything in your lawn, garden, shrubs, trees, even your cereal. So if you can get the powder variety, it's very good for you. You'll never get a sore throat or a cold. So Azomite is mined right here in the good old USA. And there's lots of stuff on their website. If you want to go to azomite.com, they're coming up with a bunch of new products, more granular, more finer material. In fact, when we had Sal Gilberti on, he uses it in all of his blends up there for his herbs, and it makes a big difference in all this stuff. So you want to keep a bag around now, and we do have both powdered and granular. So if you want to feed up your lawn without really pushing your lawn, it's a great micronutrient base. Or don't forget, if you're planting your fall vegetables, you want to put a little Azomite in the soil and use that bumper crop. That'll build up everything. You'll have plenty. This is a short season now, folks, and you want as much fertilizer and you want as much help that you can get from all of these wonderful organic products. So, and of course, we do have that bumper crop fertilizer line, and that's completely organic. So we are the big O, the organics. Remember Oscar Robertson? Well, we are the Oscar Robertson of the garden center business. Let's go right to the phone. Good morning. You're on the air with that garden guy.
Good morning, Lee.
Good morning.
Good morning. This is Chris. Can you please tell me... I had in the past, in a couple days, I had those yellow tomatoes. How do you get them to grow? And what are the yellow tomatoes?
Well, they're hybrids of red tomatoes, or a lot of them are heirlooms, and they're acid-free. So that would be the difference. In fact, years ago, my friend Pete, his mother-in-law used to make a lot of gravy, and by mistake, she got a lot of yellow tomatoes, and she cuts me up and down in Italian because she didn't want yellow tomatoes. But that's what they were bred for. That's what most people like Sun Gold. They happen to like them, and they're acid-free. So, okay.
What are they named again?
Well, you have to come to the store, honey, because it's not in season now. So if you want to come in the spring, we have about 6 or 7 varieties of yellow tomatoes.
Oh,
okay. We'll see you in the spring, honey. Thank you. Okay, this is a good time to scatter your wildflower seeds. If you start a wildflowers, we have a shade mix and a sun mix. And the rule of thumb is you do some in April, and then your better time would be to pull the weeds in the fall, of course, if you could tell which is which, and you reseed some more. And because wildflower seeds are so small, and even like clover, we recommend taking a bag of sand or very dry soil, putting them in a Ziploc bag, or a brown bag, and shake it up. And this way here, you incorporate the seed into a larger volume or a carrier so that when you scatter them, they actually space out naturally without you having to take each one of those little seeds. So we do that with our beets, too. They used to have these little contraptions where you can put them through like a syringe, but I'll tell you, it's probably more work than it's worth. So a little bit of sand or a little bit of dirt will make your life a lot easier. All right, let's not forget the rules of division, and we're not talking about the Civil Civil War. We're talking about your perennials. So perennials that bloom in the spring, you divide in the fall, and perennials that bloom in the summer and fall, you divide in the spring. So a lot of that spring material that was in or out of bloom now, or the only one would probably be bleeding hearts because they die right to the ground, but you could move them now. So that's the time you divide this stuff, and that also includes irises. So if you want to move your irises, this is a great time of the year. Use some azomite. That stuff is fantastic, and make sure that that soil has plenty of organic matter, and that's why we have all this, like we said, all this organic material. So this is the time you want to do it. Tender bulbs like dahlias and gladiolus and cannas, we always recommend putting them in pots and waiting until they die down in November, of course, and they're in full bloom. I really miss the old garden show that the Greater Bridgeport Men's Club used to have. Those guys could grow some dahlias. So unfortunately, fortunately, we still have a lot of garden clubs around, and most of the guys that were in that club with me are over in the Long Hill, and Long Hill's a wonderful club. It's one of the largest clubs that I have ever spoken to. So if you're interested in gardening, look up garden clubs in the area. It's a great thing. You'll meet some wonderful people that have the same interests that you do. As we said, fall is for planting. So now is the time, if you've been looking at that shrub or tree that you really want in your yard. We've done all the watering all summer for you, and everything has grown more. So you're really getting more for your money because we buy things by size. So if a plant is sold to us in the spring at a foot and a half to 2 foot, it's probably 3 foot now. So next year, if we kept that shrub around, and we hope we don't have to, but if we do, if we had to rebuy that plant at 3 feet, it would cost us a lot more. Of course, we have to pass on the increase to you, because if we have to replace it, of course, that's what we're in business for. So, but you got to just kind of plan ahead. Come on down, take a walk around. The place is in wonderful shape, and all of the varieties are looking really good this year. So come on down. Big deal coming up on September 21st. My alma mater, Bastic High School, having their 50th, our fifth. Can you believe I'm that old, Richie? I look that old, right? But anyway, this is a multi-year reunion because we had such a small class, and we were so close with the class before us and after us. And, of course, you know, four-year high school, you remember everybody from high school. Try remembering people from college, unless you were in some type of club or fraternity or sorority. You'll rarely remember, but you'll never forget your high school people. So check it out. It's on Reunion Planners, I believe. And the gentleman in charge of this is my friend, Dr. Henry Rosenberg, up in Massachusetts. He was one of the smartest kids that I ever knew, and he is running this deal. And if you want to sign up, go to the Facebook and look him up, Henry Rosenberg, and he'll give you all the details for this reunion. It's going to be held at Testo's on Madison Avenue, not the small Testo's, the big Testo's, on the 21st. So, and I leave for Lebanon on the 22nd, so I'm going to have a good time before I go see Mom. So let's go right to the phone. Good morning. You're on the air with that garden guy.
Hi, good morning, Lee. This is John from Shelton calling. How are you,
John?
Good. Got a question for you relating to a wasp or hornet's nest that's in a rock wall in the back of my yard, and thousands and thousands and thousands of hornets. I've used a spray. I let them in the evening when they're all back in the nest. But it's not working. They must be so deep in the rock.
Yeah, this is the time you need to call an exterminator, because they have different contraptions to get behind. I remember when I lived in Easton years ago, we had a yellow jacket nest right in my garage, and I would come home and sit in my truck and spray it. We had the old spray that went 30 feet, and they were laughing at me. So finally I got a guy come in, my good friend Stevie, that's passed away, and he went up in the attic, and it was a whole panel, like a 2x4 nest.
Yeah.
And he went and just pulled it out, and that was the end of it. So there are people out there that will take it. They are hornets, or white-faced hornets.
Yes.
Yeah, be careful. They're, if you ever get stung, you'll think you got stung, shot with a .45. So I've experienced that myself. So do call an exterminator.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Have many good days.
Thank you. All right, we have bulbs in, and not that we are recommending you plant them. The reason we bring in bulbs is, number one, they're available to us. Number two, they're in every grocery store. And number three, we bring them in for a specific reason. Number one, for selection. Number two, for the folks that want to start chilling them or getting them ready for forcing, similar to what the growers do for all of the Easter holidays. So if you count back 16 weeks to when you want to bloom, so if you want to bloom, say, in February, you go back 16 weeks, and that's when you start chilling them, and there's two different ways of doing it, putting them in paper bags and put them in your refrigerator so they get chilled, or actually potting them up the way the growers do it, but you get like 6 or 8 inch pots, and you put them toward the top of the pot, and this way here you cover them. They used to cover them with styrofoam years ago, but now they put them in big coolers, so this is the reason why we have, and you can force almost any bulb. Of course, we will have amaryllis in a little later on, which are easy, but they're an annual. They are actually an indoor flowering bulb. But the outdoor ones, daffodils, tulips, hyacinths, any of those bulbs that you want to force up, this is why we bring them in early. And keep in mind, there are different rules. Again, we always have rules in this business. And there's two sides of a tulip bulb. There's a fat side like me, and there's a flat side. So we have a fat side and a flat side. And the flat side actually is what you put to the outside of the pot so that the tulips grow inward. If you put them the other way, they'll grow out and they'll flop all over. And don't forget, if you buy cut tulips, they actually stretch right in the water. So that's just one of the characteristics of those. Pretty soon we're going to have poinsettias. Of course, if you have poinsettias and you do want to grow your own so that they flower, so the bracts color up, now's the time of the year you need to have a big closet. And every day at 4 o'clock, you want to put them in a closet and you want to take them out in the morning. And it's a short day plant, similar to mums. And this is why the mums that you see at a lot of the stores right now that are in full bloom have been shaded every day for a couple of months and force them to bloom a lot earlier. So instead of waiting for a natural cycle, which is what we do, and we have some beautiful mums, but they're going to bloom right on time in the latter part of September because they are called fall mums, and fall is not till September 21st, so that's why we call them fall mums. Let's go right to the phone. Good morning. You're on the air with that garden guy.
Yeah, good morning. I'm from Shelton. I purchased a baby lemon tree from you guys this year. And a quick question for you. What am I going to do for the wintertime?
Well,
how do I take care of it and cover
hopefully
it?
They gave you a care sheet. If you didn't get one, stop down or email me and I will send you one. The best way to do it is to facsimilate Florida, because Florida is where they grow, or California, where it's hot and dry. And so the big mistake people make is overwatering, or not putting enough, putting it in a room with enough sun, and having a saucer underneath so you can control the watering and know when it needs to be watered. And then lastly, we want to spray them once a week with an oil spray, a horticultural oil, which is all organic, and it keeps the leaves nice and shiny, it keeps the hydration, and it also keeps the bugs off of them. So, and then you spray them three times a week with just tepid water. So you want to create that high hydration or high humidity because they're used to that in their natural situation.
Okay, great. Does it matter what type of the temperature in the room it would be?
I beg your pardon?
The temperature in the room.
Well, the warmer the better, of course. You know, we're talking tropics, so yes, 70, 75 would be nice. So if you have a sunroom, that would be the place to put them.
Okay, I appreciate it.
And that southern, it'd be the southern or western side of your house.
Okay.
All righty. If you want to email me for that care sheet, it's lee@ganumsgardencenter.com or thatgardenguy@ganumsgardencenter.com. Oh. I guess he's taken off on us. All right. There's a whole new movement in Canada. Believe it or not, there's Canadian cherries, and they're grown in the interior of British Columbia, and they have the highest sugar content. This is a whole new project that the Canadian government, especially in British Columbia. So I don't know if they're available in stores, but I know this showed up in the Produce magazine, and it's very exciting, especially for that region, where they're really not known. Most of our cherries, the cherry season, season's almost over, or over for sure. And the best ones, of course, from the Dalles and Oregon. And that's my favorite cherry area. But you can grow cherries. And we also get cherries, don't forget, around the Christmas time, we get them from South America, because it's the opposite season. So they're in their spring, summer. We're into our fall, winter. So that's why you see so many different peaches and plums and everything showing up around Christmas time, because it's their season to supply us. So you can be, I mean, years ago we used to look forward to the grapes and cherries early in the season. Now you can get them year-round, and boy, we are spoiled, so.
Now it's time to find out what's growing in Ganem's garden. Here's Lee Ganem, the garden guy, from Ganem's Garden Center, Kings Highway Cutoff, Fairfield, on WICC 600.
And we're back, and the phone lines are open, 203-333-WICC, or 203-9422. Thank you for all the calls today. They're all great calls, because people are asking good questions. And, you know, going back to school is very important now, because we used to bring our pencils. But, of course, in our business, we use pencils for testing the moisture factor. And that's what I want to tell that gentleman with the lime tree or lemon tree. That's one way you can test for dryness or wet. So keep those, buy those number two pencils. They're on sale everywhere. So just, you know, shave them down and you'll have your own water meter. So let's go right to the phone. Good morning. You're on the air with that garden guy.
Yes, good morning, Lee. I grew from seeds these mammoth sunflowers.
Yep.
Now that they're dying off, some of them, I should say, do I let it dry right on the plant, or do I cut it off? Because I want to give the seeds to the birds.
Well, the birds will help themselves if you leave them out there on the plant. They actually will last longer on the plant, so unless you want to take them somewhere for your grandchildren or children to grow them next year, I would leave them where they are.
Okay, so I won't cut them.
No, I think that, you know, that's the beauty of them, the seeds. And, of course, you know, you buy sunflower seeds, and now you have a natural store out there for them to come shopping, and you won't charge them much. And they don't need any plastic bags.
Perfect.
All righty.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, now it's fertilizer time, because it is Labor Day, and if you're following our lawn program, you have a number of options. So hopefully you've gotten your crabgrass under control, and if you haven't, there's still time. And, of course, recommending that you cut it instead of pulling it has always been one of my peeves, and especially weeds, too. Cut them at the base, and they have these, I see a number of these wonderful tools on the market where they pull them up. It's probably the wrong thing to do. So better to get one of the old-fashioned grass shears. That's a long handle, because we're old and feeble, and just get underneath that weed and just snip it and get rid of those plants, get rid of the seed, and that will help clear the way for a renovation. And we do have a complete renovation list at the store you can pick up. And aeration, of course, if it hasn't been done in a couple of years, this is perfect weather. The soil's not too wet, not too dry. So you want to get out there now, and if you have a, if you could pull it, plug it. Plugging it is one of the best ways, aerating, and letting the plugs dry on the top of the soil, and then a power rake. That'll pick up anything that's dead. And then if you really want to be technical, you get yourself one of those seeder machines, and the drill seeder machine will put them down in like corn rows, and there's different settings for different types of seeds. So rent a good one. We don't recommend box stores for that stuff. We recommend local people, and A to Z Rental on Mountain Grove, I believe, has probably got the best equipment. So book that stuff early, because everybody's going to have the same idea that you have. And this is a great weekend if you want to do a little exercise. Get out there and rake it. And raking it instead of power raking it is great exercise. Of course, it's one of the best. You do want to get the pesky seedlings like from woody ornamentals that are in your hedges and stuff out as soon as possible, because if you leave them there or cut them back, they just get stronger and they grow more and thicker, and they're harder to get rid of. So if you want to plant or transplant, you could do your peonies now. Peonies probably don't look too hot because they have a lot of powdery mildew, but just leave the leaves on there until they completely die to the ground, but you can move them. The key to peonies is making sure you plant them at the same depth they were at before, and don't leave them alone. They like company. If you don't have more than two or three, you're not going to have flowers. And so this is one of those community plants. You have to have a number of them. Looking over the apple crops, of course, course, the peach crop wasn't so bad, but a lot of fungus on peaches because of the crummy weather we had. So, you know, a lot of folks, the later varieties are still around a little bit, but native peaches never last as long as the California or the southern or eastern shore peaches. So, and some of those have been a little on the dry side, even out of Georgia and South Carolina. Everybody seems to have their problems, and even watermelons were tough this year. I mean, I think I can remember having two really good watermelons. And I haven't seen a lot of honeydew around, and this is honeydew season. And, you know, we have a board member at the Master Nursery. His wife works for one of the larger cantaloupe and honeydew people in California, and Peacock brand and a number of other brands that are exceptional. And I remember old Buster Kosovai, when we used to go to Stratfield Farms, he was the melon expert, of course, and that nice vein on a honeydew was, and the smell. And again, you know, shopping for fruit is a basically smelling, not squeezing. If you want to squeeze your wife, but smell your vegetables, your fruits, and even your vegetables smell. Native tomatoes have a wonderful odor, so you can tell if they're native or they're from a hothouse. So a lot of things are really just moving along now, and if you do want to get a jump on the season, if you haven't done a soil test in a number of years, especially for your garden, if your gardens are done, you can go in there and just sneak a little bit of soil. We do have the kits from the University of Connecticut, the soil test lab, or you can we come down, we have soil test kits on a do-it-yourself deal. So the pH is very important in many crops, and if you don't have the right pH, don't expect great results. So this is a good time to correct it. Also, you'll get a complete list of nutrients that are in that soil, which is why you might need that azomite, because it has all those things that you don't get in macro fertilizers. And don't forget, we do have that Sustain product, which is one of my favorites. We have an 824 and a 464, basically turkey manure, and it's very, very organic and very beneficial to the soil. And if you want to put a second application of corn gluten, you can still do that. Not that it's doing an awful lot for us, but it's the only organic application we have until somebody comes up with a new remedy, and we don't know what that is. So a number of my friends in the growing business are testing a lot of hemp. And hemp is a lot different than the marijuana. They both look the same, but you know, you just can't grow marijuana in Connecticut. It's not legal. So if you see a lot of hemp around, they're under a state program, and the state program regulates everything from the seed to the type of fertilizer and to the type of insecticides that they can use. And it's quite a challenge. This is such an open field. There are no regulations of sorts because it is federally prohibited. But this needs to make a change soon, because a lot of things can go bad, especially with CBD oils, if they're grown in a number of different places and there's somebody there who doesn't know what they're doing and they apply a chemical. That's going to affect you, because that's something you ingest or you put on your body. So educate yourself about CBD oils. My wife has been on it for a couple of years, and she looks wonderful. She looks about 20 years younger than me, and all her aches and pains are gone. So maybe she'll find a younger guy now, but he's going to have to provide it with the CBD oil. And we may have some soon. We have a prospect coming down the line at one of my shows. I'll be going to Atlantic City next week, and we'll keep you updated as to what's going on with this new market. And it's going to be a huge market in this country. They're anticipating that over 44% of the population by 2022 will be taking some form of CBD oil or CBD ointment. And everybody I've talked to that's been into this, and we did a lot of research on this, because we really need to know what's in this stuff and what is the difference between marijuana. And you know, there's been a number of articles that the marijuana today, medical marijuana, is not your grandma's marijuana or your grandpa's. It's a lot different. So people can get very sick from it if they're not used to it. So that should be under some type of supervision by somebody that knows. enough about the cultivars, and there are a number of cultivars. As I mentioned from my Denver trip, I was was really impressed by the vertical gardening systems out there, and that's why it's so expensive, because you really need to do something with something that goes into your body. You need to know what's going on. So enough of that for now. Keep in mind, you can plant a lot of vegetables now, like we talked about. You could already be picking already if you had them in a couple of weeks ago. And mosquitoes. Mosquitoes are a big problem. Triple E's around. Everything's around. So make sure you empty your containers of stagnant water, bird baths, etc. Change the water a lot. We have mosquito dunks for those hard to get to places. Or if you want to use eight insecticide or mosquito sprays, you can eliminate the adult mosquitoes for a picnic or party 4 hours before. So we have a number of choices for you. Keep an eye out for slugs, of course. Slug damage is prevalent on a lot of things, especially if you're watering too much or if it's raining too much and it's absorbed. So gathering herbs, as we said, now's a good time to gather them and start drying them for the winter. Yeah, prepare for the long winter. And if you want to really, if you have lots of tomatoes, I have a wonderful recipe for you, which is easy. It's something I do at the store while I'm working, and it doesn't take up any of my time, so I can't get fired. So I take a nice big baking pan, and my favorites are the Juliet tomatoes or the cherry tomatoes, because they're the sweetest. You put a little olive oil, of course, on the bottom of the pan. You put your tomatoes in, lots of garlic, I love garlic, cloves of garlic, and salt and pepper, of course, lots of pepper, and throw them in an oven at around 200 degrees, and let them caramelize for about 8 to 10 hours or 6 to 8 hours, whatever. You start to see the caramelization. Let them cool down. Add a little basil about a half an hour before you pull them out, because if you put the basil in too early, it turns black. So you really want, and you know, remember that guy on the television there, YouTube, make sure you tear the basil. You get the best flavor. So we do chiffonade, so it doesn't really matter, but whole basil will be just fine. And then put it in a blender. And if it's a little bit too thick, or if you want to run it through one of the mills to get the seeds out, you'll have a nice gravy, and you can eat that with any type of pasta. So there's always room for, and or if you want to freeze it, you can freeze it right away and just take it out, and then you can put it through the processor. So a lot of things can be done to prepare. People used to can years ago. A lot of my friends still jar tomatoes for the winter. They're good for 18 months, so most Italian families, of course, will use a couple of jars a week. So believe it or not, it's a great investment for, instead of buying canned tomatoes, even though some of the canned tomatoes are very, very good. So our tip of the week: don't buy your pumpkins or blooming and full bloom fall mums yet. The chances are they won't make it to Halloween. Like we talked about just a little bit earlier, they do force them. So ours are grown on a natural cycle or a natural timing, so that they're just starting to bud up. The colors are very clearly marked on the pots, so you'll get exactly the color you want. And everything starts to get a little bit better looking as the weather kicks in a little cooler. So flowering cabbage, kale, even a lot of the penicillium, they'll still have a lot of color. We have millet. Millet is very good, but it can be very invasive, so be careful with millet. If you put them in containers, they're not bad. They give you a nice fall color. And then you can add decorations closer to Halloween to your corn stalks and et cetera to make your holiday really perky. So, but if you put them in, if you buy mums that are in full bloom now, don't expect them to last till even Columbus Day, so they're just not going to make it. And I think with the warm spell coming up, my son, I know, plants the 20th or so of September, so that his commercial properties have lots and lots of color out there, so at the right time of the year. So if you're going to do any manure, of course, if you're raising rabbits, rabbit manure is very safe to use, other than the cow and chicken and all that. You have to let that temper a little bit. So the other thing we've been doing is getting calls on digger wasps, and they're out there for a reason. They're killing cicadas. So and cicadas are those they're coming, some of them are coming out of the ground and shelling their skins, but they're harmless, and the wasps are harmless. So if they bother you, if you want to put something down, we do have something you can put down. So get out and work this weekend. That's why they call it Labor Day. We'll be open 9 to 5 today, 8 to 4 tomorrow. We give some of the folks a little break tomorrow. We have picnics, etc. So we wish everybody a happy Labor Day, and we'll see you next week. This is that Garden Guy signing off.
Preceding was paid for by Ganem's Garden Center and Florist LLC, who is solely responsible for its content.
WICC Bridgeport, WEBE HD2 Westport.